Greetings, friends. I'm John Haspel. This is a recording of our Saturday morning Dhamma class from Cross River Meditation Center in Frenchtown, New Jersey, on June 16, 2018. My Dhamma talk on our Sangha discussion is on the Sadaka Sutta. The Sadaka Sutta is an interesting sutta where the Buddha uses a simile of a beauty queen to teach mindfulness. If you find benefit from this talk, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. Thank you. Peace. So Claudine has a pretty good understanding of what we're doing here, but just let me put a little bit more. The important thing of to remember is that everything the Buddha, once he awakened, taught for 45 years, and it said that he gave thousands and thousands. The number is usually 84,000, but it just means a lot. He gave 84,000 different teachings that are known as suttas. But every one of those suttas was taught in the context of what he awakened to, which is something called dependent origination. Dependent origination teaches that the problem of confused and deluded thinking resulting in ongoing disappointing experiences originates in and is dependent on certain conditions. And the initial condition is ignorance, and it's a very specific type of ignorance. It's ignorance of Four Noble Truths. And so his very first teaching then was to teach Four Noble Truths, to bring wisdom where there was once ignorance. In other words, to end that condition of ignorance and replace it with wisdom. And it's a wisdom of simply knowing who we are in relation to the world that we live in an authentic and realistic way. And if you think about that just a little bit further, a mind that understands whatever it is, whatever the subject might be, will stop grasping after something. In other words, if you want to learn how to change the oil in a car, coming up to that point, you might be anticipating it and be confused about it and be worried that you might not be able to do it. But once you learn it, you take this nut off and let it drop away, blah, 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 you do this, then you're calm about that. The same applies to understanding who we are in relation to the world. Once we understand it, our minds are simply at peace. And like you stated before, there's no more stress in the world. So this is a very profound teaching. It goes a little bit further than just changing the oil in your car. But it's important to remember that everything the Buddha taught, including what I'm going to the sutta I'm going to speak to today, is taught in that context. And then it makes sense. And then we can, when we understand that, we avoid a lot of the pitfalls of modern Buddhism that we talked about before, substituting teachings or substituting concepts for actually developing the Dhamma. Okay, so this, and this is a simple and direct teaching that's appropriate for anyone that's new. Claudine is just, this is her first class. She came to a radio show that Matt and I did last Tuesday, I guess it was. Mm-hmm. And we did such a good job that you couldn't not be.
You really did. You did an
well,
excellent job.
Thank you. It was fun. Hillary did a great job at interviewing, too. Mm-hmm. Did you learn? I'm getting away from it. It was good for you, though, to learn that, to see how it's done. And
oh, absolutely. Because yeah. I'm trying to figure out my place there.
Yeah.
And I think I'd love to do it. It looks very complicated, though, but maybe.
Yeah. There's a lot
they
of.
Break it apart in tasks. I could probably do it.
Yeah, so when you start, give me a matter call, we'll come back.
Okay.
John, what was the radio show about?
I don't remember the title of it. Do you remember?
It's called, I'm new to it too. It'll come to me. But it's on, it was Tuesday night.
Yeah.
Was it Tuesday night?
Tuesday after 5 o'clock on Tuesday.
And she does it at Stepping Stones.
Stepping Stones, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Local
it's
station
a
or?
WDVR.
Oh, that's a good station.
Yeah. I was surprised how widespread it is. We've done the Hunterdon and Chamber radio show 4 or 5 times, and that has a nationwide audience, but it's only on one channel. I think that WDVR is part of an affiliated radio station with 8 or 10 different stations.
And wow.
It was, yeah. And again, Hillary Murphy was her name. She did a great job interviewing us. And Matt always, you know, like I think I said there, I could always listen to Matt talk, and you know, he did a great job. Anyway, and Matt will be here today at 10:30. So let me read the introduction. This brief sutta is a simile used to emphasize mindfulness as the Buddha teaches mindfulness. Grounded in the concentration developed and maintained through shamatha vipassana meditation, the refined mindfulness the Buddha teaches provides the focus and quality of mind necessary to integrate the Eightfold Path. So meditation is as the Buddha teaches meditation, as I teach it, is solely for deepening concentration, to then hold in mind the refined mindfulness that can integrate the entire Eightfold Path. So I know that meditation today is often called mindfulness meditation, and a proper meditation is being mindful of the breath. But what that
concentration develops is a certain quality of mind that is well focused on the Dhamma. And ultimately, it's a quality of mind that is always resting in peace and equanimity. There's no disturbance. And that's the difference between meditation and the quality of mind of mindfulness. It is the Eightfold Path that leads directly to unbinding from views rooted in ignorance of Four Noble Truths and brings profound clarity and understanding to three marks of existence. And again, the three marks of existence, which simply means that all of us have the same experience, we carry these marks within us, are anicca, impermanence. All things in the phenomenal world are impermanence. Impermanent. Most importantly, we recognize that our thoughts and our views are impermanent, and so we seek holding on to them, clinging to them. The second mark of existence is, the Pali word is anatta. Anatta, the way the Buddha uses that word, which is different than the way it was commonly used and still applied today, is simply to say that the views that we're holding of a self do not constitute a self. They're not a self. That's what anatta means. And because of a misunderstanding of impermanence and wrong views of self, we create the third mark of existence, suffering in our lives or stress in our lives. So the entire Buddha's teachings is to recognize and gain insight, and a very specific insight, into these three marks of existence so that we can mindfully let them go, let go of these wrong views. And so then we're still living in an impermanent world. Things are always changing, but because we're not clinging to views and not insisting that these views are ours, we live in peace because we're able to accept life as life unfolds rather than react to it and rather than resist it.
Sounds like deprogramming. That's how I'm looking at it.
That's a great way of saying, yes. The problem that results from ignorance is a type of mind that's called conditioned mind. A modern psychological phrase, is confirmation bias, meaning we're biased towards seeing things in a way that confirms whatever views we have, no matter how diluted those views are. And so the Eightfold Path is a way of deprogramming that conditioned mind. And it's a very simple and direct process, but at times it can be very challenging because we are coming up against every view that we hold, no matter how diluted those views are. Because we've created an identity around these views, we are attached to them. And so this is one of the reasons you'll hear me say, I hope you continue to come to class, we must be very gentle with ourselves, because if not, we'll be judging ourselves harshly, maybe for having wrong views and even having to go through this process, or think that we're not doing it fast enough or good enough. The framework of the Eightfold Path brings great freedom and power, because once we integrate the Eightfold Path, we know that we're headed in the right direction. And as long as we continue to act within that refined mindfulness, we know that the end is assured, and we'll find the cessation of all suffering.
Power, delight, and joy.
Yes. Mm. So here's the sutta. The sutta is called the Beauty Queen. And it's a great simile.
This was great reading.
Yeah, it is. It's a wonderful sutta. And like with all similes and metaphors, you can't stretch it too far. Keep it to how it's presented. I have heard that on one occasion, the Buddha was in Siddhaka. He addressed those assembled. Friends, imagine a large crowd became excited over a beauty queen with many talents who has just arrived. And they declared, a beauty queen has arrived. She's singing. She's dancing. I just love this. Think of this is an awakened human being 2,600 years ago using somewhat of a cartoonish example to teach his Dhamma. But it also points to how simple it is. A man comes along seeking an authentic life, meaning integrated within the Eightfold Path, and the deathless state. I'll explain the deathless state later. He seeks an end to suffering born of ignorance. The excited crowd says to him, take this bowl filled to the brim with oil. You must carry it on your head through the crowd, excited with the beauty queen. You must not spill a drop. A swordsman will be behind you, and if you spill a drop of oil, he will cut off your head. The Buddha continues, friends, will this man, not being mindful of the bowl of oil, become distracted by what is occurring outside? Now remember, this man is well integrated in the Dhamma, and so the response was, no, he won't, great teacher. The Buddha continues, I have given you this simile to teach you appropriate mindfulness. And again, the Buddha often refers to mindfulness as appropriate mindfulness or skillful mindfulness to differentiate it from a generalized mindfulness, like even that book you mentioned. Mm-hmm. The bowl filled to the brim with oil represents mindfulness united with the body. The whole point of the Buddha's examination and exploration and development of mindfulness is to unite the mind and the body, which is something that a lot of other practices inadvertently discourage and continue to keep the mind focused outside of the body, in other words, objectifying. So in using this simile, someone who is concerned about the swordsman behind them will have their thoughts objectified to the bowl of oil, and they'll be constantly trying to balance it. Someone who is calm and at peace with no matter what's occurring will forget the bowl of oil and simply remain calm and at peace. So the Buddha says, this is how you should train yourselves. We will develop mindfulness united with the body. We will pursue mindfulness united with the body, and appropriate mindfulness will be our guide. Appropriate mindfulness will be the basis for steadying our minds right within. Again, a reference to bringing our minds where we are living. The body is our anchor to our life as our life occurs. And if we can integrate our mind with our body, in other words, to integrate our life with our life as it's unfolding, we'll cease creating stress by having a mind that is stuck in the past or projecting itself into the future. When you're not living in the present moment, you cannot help but create stress because you're living an unauthentic life. You're not living in reality. And in fact, you're living a life that is influenced by past experience, and you're clinging to that past experience, and that past experience is influencing your mind in the present moment to the future. And you get stuck in this continuum of ignorance. Jen brought it up, and it's actually, I used her line in next week's sutta, the introduction. Jen was on our last retreat, and we had a really wonderful retreat. Everybody's gaining insight. And she said, ignorance requires a timeline in order to have the experience of ignorance. And that's exactly true. A mind that is rooted in what's occurring right now is outside of time. In other words, time has no meaning. Even though we're in a continuum, we're still progressed from where we are in this moment towards dying, towards a physical state of dying. But because our minds are no longer stuck in the past and projecting into the future, we're simply present with what's occurring. And Lorna said right after that, that there is no aging when you're awakened, when you're present with what's occurring. And that's what the Buddha refers to as the deathless state or the timeless state. Of course, we still die, but we're no longer preoccupied with it. In fact, it has no concern. It's of no concern with what's happening right now. Our minds are at peace. And in that way, every moment in life is profoundly meaningful. And that's the secret to having a fulfilling life, is to have each moment be meaningful and not need it to be any different than it is. And so even things that occur that might have caused us suffering or regret, wishing that it wasn't occurring in this moment, we'll simply be at peace with it because we know that no matter what it is, it's impermanent and I no longer need to react to it. But we also gain the ability, the profound ability, to respond with mindfulness rooted in the Eightfold Path. We make decisions that no longer create stress and suffering in our lives.
John, can I just add one thing? When you say you know it's impermanent, like a subtle shift in that is that we don't intellectually know it's impermanent because we're just being present for each unfolding moment. So I don't know.
Well, the intellectual understanding of impermanence happens first. Everything we learn, human beings just learn this way. We first learn intellectually. You're learning, we're all learning intellectually right now. And then we integrate this through the Eightfold Path. We integrate the initial intellectual knowledge into a path that ultimately results in a quality of mind that's called refined mindfulness or appropriate mindfulness. Thank you, Mark. Let me go back one line. Appropriate mindfulness will be the basis for steadying our minds right within. Appropriate mindfulness will bring skillful integration of the Eightfold Path. This is how you should train yourselves. That's the end of the sutta. That last line is probably the most important line in that sutta because it points our minds towards the only path the Buddha ever taught, to develop mindfulness. And as he teaches mindfulness, I think next week the classes, Tuesday and Saturday classes, will be on the Magga Vibhanga Sutta, where the Buddha teaches the analysis of the Eightfold Path. But that analysis is to be mindful of each factor of the Eightfold Path. And he would often explain it this way. To be mindful that when you're in wrong view, to enter and remain in right view. This is appropriate mindfulness. to be mindful when you're in wrong intention and enter and remain in right intention. This is appropriate mindfulness. And he goes through the entire Eightfold Path. So again, the concentration we develop in meditation is then applied to hold in mind the entire Eightfold Path as the framework for developing awakening. And that's what that's the reference here, and it's what the Buddha continually referenced throughout his teaching career. That's today's sutta. Thank you. So now a typical class, we'll go around the room, and if there's any questions or comments, we'll get to that, and we'll start with Lorna. Good morning, Lorna.
Good morning. To me, this sutta reminds me of the fire discourse, because they're both speaking about the same thing.
Yep.
In the fire discourse, which is his third sutta after he awakened, he was not long awakened, and he realized that potentially everything in the world you could get craving, clinging about, potential everything.
Could raise
every
your
sound,
passions.
Every smell, every blade of grass even, is something you could, you know, get drawn to, and your mind would leave your body, and and then your mind has left your body.
Yeah, and now you're in a mindless state.
Yeah. So it's really talking about the same thing, that the dancing girl is, or the dancing lady, whatever, is the big distraction, the current big distraction. But there's always a current distraction. Always. As soon as you wake up in the morning, there's a possibility of having a current distraction.
Yeah.
And it talks to the same thing, that, you know, just to accept that that's all phenomena, it's all impermanent, it'll come, it'll go, it's nothing to get, for your mind really to be disturbed about.
Yeah.
You can, if you have sufficient understanding and sufficient concentration on not getting distracted.
Yeah.
That's the key.
That's the key.
And it so there's a big connection between the fire discourse, the fire sutta, and this sutta to me. They both speak of exactly the same thing,
yeah,
exactly the same problem that everybody has. We all associate and want phenomena to fit into our way of thinking.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my take on it, really. That is.
Thank you. That really is great insight. And you're speaking to having developed a broad enough framework of what the Buddha's teaching to see how this sutta is very similar to the fire discourse, because it all speaks to the same thing, doesn't it? And you could say that the simile of the beauty queen is also a metaphor for the world at large.
Absolutely.
We're distracted by the singing and the dancing and the beauty queen, all the wonderful baubles in the world.
Mm-hmm.
We want those. That's when that instills desire in us, that's where we become objectified. Now our minds is outside of our bodies, and we are literally mindless.
I do have a confusion, and I don't feel it really clear in my head about the relationship between my mind and my body. I know that my body is just it's not my body, this is the body I got.
Mm-hmm.
It just arrived with me. It's not of any choosing of mine or anything. But I have not really worked out how really to think about my body.
You mean how it occurred? How you found yourself in a body?
Or day to day, moment to moment.
Yeah, it's moment to moment. It's I know you've not to get attached to it, like it's part of me. It's just a body. But I feel it's part of me.
Well,
you know,
it is in a very realistic sense. But remember the series we did on how the Buddha taught and why he taught and avoided those questions. That the question of how did I end up in this body is the same question that Vajragoda insisted on an answer for: where was I in the past and where am I going? The reason why that's an inappropriate question is because it doesn't relate to what's occurring right now. You're a body and you're a mind in a body. That's all that we need to know. When we start questioning where we come from and where we might be going is when we lose the Dhamma. It seems like a reasonable question, doesn't it? But it's the question itself, as the Buddha would say, the question itself is confusing you. Let go of the question because it's irrelevant. What's important is to recognize that as your life unfolds, your mind must be united in the body for there to be peace in your own mind. The other, it also relates to that, remember the sutta on the riddle tree. We create these scenarios in our mind that we insist we have an answer for before we go forward. And a simple observation is not where did it come from, is here it is.
I think my confusion is when you get drawn out of your mind into phenomena and you need to reconnect with your mind and you bring your mind back to your breathing, I'm bringing my mind back to my breathing in my body, which I can't believe it's truly myself.
Oh, yeah.
And there's just like, there's that disconnect there.
Yeah, and that the disconnect is simply because you don't have a completely developed right view. And that's all it is. And of course, as we're developing right view, there's still fragments of wrong view that we're struggling to let go of. The reason why the Buddha taught meditation and the four foundations of mindfulness is to do just that. The first thing we do in meditation is to be mindful of the breath in the body. Why? Because that immediately unites our mind and our body.
Yeah.
The next thought might be, well, wait a minute, I'm not just a mind, I have a body. It's a distracting thought. It seems like a reasonable thing to chase after. What do we do in meditation? We come back to our breathing, the sensation of breathing in our body. Feelings arise and pass away. Thoughts arise and pass away. The thought that, wait a minute, I want an answer. What am I doing in this body? Come back to the sensation of breathing. Because the question itself is just a distraction from what's occurring. It seems reasonable. So then, how does an awakened human being, how does a Buddha see being a mind in a body? He sees it as being a mind in the body without any distraction or any need for it to be any different. So, and then I stop objectifying my body. I stop needing it to be any different.
Mm-hmm.
I finally realize that at 5'7", I'm never going to play center field for the Yankees, no matter how young I might imagine myself to be. I'm at peace with that.
I'll never be a dancing girl either.
Yeah. I'll never be a beauty queen. But I can be, and this is the most important thing, it's a great discussion, but I can be a person that lives in authentic Dhamma,
yeah.
No matter what's going on in the world. And that's when we let go of objectifying, and especially when we decide to practice a Dhamma practice, to stop objectifying that by embellishments, adaptations, and all the rest of it that goes along with it. Again, the Buddha understood this. He understood this compulsive need to establish myself outside of my body, rooted in ignorance. And so he taught a very specific, and you could say a narrow path, because it needs to be, a middle way path, but a very narrow path between extreme views that would otherwise objectify our views. So a great insight into how these all work together. And that's it. I want to use the word common, but I don't mean to minimize that thought. That's a common question that people will have to address as they develop the Dhamma. They might see it in different ways, but we're going to come across that notion. Wait a minute, I'm a mind and a body. Where'd my body come from? That's the wrong view. I'm a mind and a body, not a mind in a body. This is one organism that's developing. The whole name, the title of the book is Becoming Buddha, Becoming Awakened. With right view, we can continue to become awakened. With wrong view, we can only become further ignorance. And so we have to recognize, just like you just described, we have to recognize wrong views and how they're holding us back. Thank you.
Thank you.
Anthony, good to see you this morning, as always.
Good to see you. Good to see everyone. Welcome, Claudia. Your talk reminded me of a documentary I saw recently with David Bowie, because I wasn't always like a huge David Bowie fan, but I liked him. And I saw this documentary and I was amazed at how he conducted the last few years of his life knowing he was dying. He did probably, arguably, his two greatest albums, worked relentlessly, and they were showing that even when he was taping one of the songs, he was having a lot of problems breathing, but you wouldn't know it, like, in the way it sounded. It was beautiful. And he had this assembled this great band, and he wrote a play, and he did all the things he wanted to do in his last years. And I thought, wow, you know, that's the ultimate challenge, isn't it? Because you're dealing with accepting impermanence, you're dealing with the thought of losing yourself. You know, we don't know what exists after that. And some people go in one direction and get really depressed and reclusive, and then some people find it as an opportunity to do everything they want to do and do it the best way possible and go out in a big way with gratitude.
Yeah.
And so I was just thinking, like, listening to your talk, thinking, wow, if we can accept that, that's the ultimate challenge.
Yeah.
You know, then nothing else really is going to be that big of a deal.
Yeah. Thank you for that. The Buddha often said we should take to the Dhamma like our hair's on fire or like our head's on fire. Because we never, in the Bahia Sutta teaches, we never know when we're going to lose the opportunity to awaken. This is the life we have to do it. All the mythology around endless lifetimes to do it, that's just a distraction. And there's no guarantee, especially if you listen to the Buddha, this is the opportunity to awaken in this lifetime. Let's not blow it. And like Bahia did, he took to the Dhamma like that. He understood it. And so it didn't matter that a couple minutes later he got trampled by a cow and died. He had awakened. And everybody laughs at that. That's it. Look up the Bahia Sutra, Bahiya. It's a great little story. I'll let you read it. I won't tell it. But the important thing to take away from what Anthony read, what I just said, and the entire Dhamma, is that this moment holds the potential to awaken. And there's a few things we have to do that. We have to integrate the Eightfold Path and live mindfully within that. Anything else, and this is why most modern Buddhism doesn't work, anything else that distracts us from that Eightfold Path is simply just a distraction. And we're losing the opportunity that this present moment holds the potential for, to awaken. And that's how we should take to the Dhamma. That we can, this moment holds the potential and we can do it in this moment. For most of us, it's going to take a few moments strung together in mindfulness. But the point is that this is an achievable goal. The Buddha taught a path for human beings to develop, not someone special or having special gifts or powers or things bestowed from a supreme being. Each and every one of us holds the potential to awaken as long as we can engage in the Eightfold Path wholeheartedly. So thank you for that. Claudine, welcome to our Sangha. I'm so glad you joined us. Is your head spinning?
Yes.
I'm sorry.
But one of the things I was thinking was just kind of the opposite of what you're talking about with the mind body. I think I've been living my life not realizing how attached my body is to my mind. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't believe that not putting those things together could have such a physical effect.
Yeah.
And I don't want that.
So you're
sorry.
No, that there's a lot of tears in this.
That's
point.
A really, really, really big. For me, I was like, "Whoa, I'm not connecting." That's why this is so great, because for the first time, probably in my life, I'm connecting. And kind of when we were doing the meditation, I was kind of thinking of it as, and I don't know if this is right or not, but like a massaging of my mind, like just taking care of my mind, because I never do that. I never have, you know, school, babies, marriage, babies, teenagers, and not, and then boom, you haven't focused on your mind, your body at all, and now you're paying the price for that.
Yeah, that's profound insight after a short time. But that's exactly it. That's what we're that's the secret to happiness, is to be able to unite our minds and our bodies. The problem is that conditioned mind. We're ignorant of the way things are, and so we're always fighting against that. We're always objectifying ourselves. It's always the next thing. And even in so-called spiritual practice, we think we found the great secret to this, and if I just do this or follow this or believe this way, that somehow magically I'll be transformed. The Buddha realized that's all magical thinking. He gave us a very practical way of developing that profound mindfulness that unites the mind and the body. And that's where peace and happiness resides. It would make sense, wouldn't it? Mm-hmm. That we need to be united in our bodies. And you're not unique in that realization. That's the common human problem, is that we're objectified outside of our bodies, rooted in ignorance of the way things are. So you gave yourself a good start.
I feel like that's why I had a con, because I've been kind of studying this on the periphery a little bit, and then the radio person invites me to this interview, and it's about that, and I'm like, oh, this is a sign.
And that's just how it is. You know, when you're really ready to hear it, two people could have come here this morning, one who was not ready to hear it and one who is. And to that person who wasn't quite ready to hear it, it would sound like a lot of nonsense. And, you know, because that's what it is to someone who's really not ready to hear it. And they might gravitate towards, if they think that Buddhism is the answer, that they'll likely gravitate towards something else other than what the Buddha said. Again, that's fine. You were ready to hear it. You're welcome. Thank you for being here. I say this to everybody who's new: be very gentle with yourself. Don't judge yourself or the practice harshly. That'll help keep you going. And just remember that meditation is for deepening concentration. And every time you find that you're caught up in your thoughts again, whether it's a feeling or a thought that's distracting you, and you come back to the sensation of breathing, you're deepening concentration. And that's a successful meditation practice. You cannot gauge a successful meditation practice by saying, well, I have to be mindful of my breath for 5 minutes or 10 minutes or 20 minutes. And if I have a thought, that's a unsuccessful meditation practice. That's wrong. Every time you come back to the sensation of breathing, you're deepening concentration. That's how the Buddha taught meditation. So, glad you're here.
Thank
you. Maura, good to see you this morning.
Good to be here. And welcome, Claudine.
Yes.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here. And I think that basically all the suttas wind around the same thing. So you could say, I could think of a million examples of where this just relates back to. I was thinking of when Lorna was talking of the Rahulavada Sutta and thinking about acts. He's in that Sutta, Claudine, he's giving his son instruction about how to look at actions of body, speech, and mind. And we can, so is this bodily action what was my intention? What were the results? Was it harmful? Was it not? And so kind of it's a reflective way. So to me, I don't know, being embodied, being integrated, I love the sutta, as I said this morning, thinking about, okay, so the dancing woman is there, but you can also be the dancing woman with the bottle, the oil on your head, in a sense. I mean, all right, John's not going to agree with anything I say, so.
I'm fine with what you're saying. I'm listening to you.
But it's when you're truly present in each moment as it's unfolding. It's just an integrated way of being. So you have to be in your body, but you're not necessarily thinking, I'm in my body, because that would take you out of your body, in a sense. So I don't know. I don't feel like talking anymore.
I'm glad you're here this morning.
Yeah.
Thank you. Do you have anything else you'd like to say?
It's hard to put into words, but it's the more that one, so one of the other things that I was thinking of, and I won't articulate it well, and I kind of get, I myself, when I see like no reaction, it's hard for me to keep talking because I feel like what I'm saying isn't clear, and it feels very clear inside of me. So it's just the articulation of it is not always so clear. But I heard, and this is pulling back another unrelated event, but it was, I was on a trip last year in Ireland, and they were talking about mythology, and it was a kind of an Irish story about, it was kind of this weird mythological story, but the end of it was between two warring factions, I'm trying to make it clear, that the way that the guy took back the sword that was stolen was that it said something like there was nothing out, there was no projections outside of himself. And I can't articulate that well, but what it is, on some level, it spoke to the same thing about the guy walking through the crowd with the dancing woman and the oil on his head and the sword guy behind his back. And if you're fully embodied and mindful of the sense gates and the whole Eightfold Path, there's nothing to fear, and there's no aging, and there's no sickness, and there's no death, and there's no, there's just what's appropriate to do. Your body will move, you'll catch the baby, you'll take the sword, you know, it's just so very natural, and there's danger and there's joy, and it's just what's appropriate and next. So I don't know, like that, and I think so on a very practical level, as a person in this world, I know when that's happening and I know when it isn't. I can tell when I'm integrated, and I can tell when I am delighting here and delighting there, and that's one of another sutta, you know, you know, you're just in aversion to what's happening, or the mind is being pulled and attaching with all kinds of things outside of itself. And catching that with the concentration and coming back to driving on the road, it's a felt experience. And one is a little uncomfortable and stressful, and the other one is ease and the cessation, right? So that's like the path, right? The Four Noble Truths. There's the suffering and there's the cessation. And it may not fit perfectly in the way that you say it, John, but I think it fits in the way that I say it. So there you have it.
I think you articulated that very well. Thank you. One announcement. Becoming Buddha now has an app.
There's info on the website.
It's called a progressive web app, which is kind of the newest technology about apps, that it's installed through your browser rather than through Google Play Store or the Apple App Store. What it gives you is instant access to the website. Once you download a page, it's there on your phone. And the other thing is, when you want to go to becomingbuddha.com, you don't have to go to a browser and enter the address. You can just click on the app. So I hope you download it. And
you don't have to click off the newsletter thing either, probably, right?
What do you mean?
Because like if you open up the website, like all websites these days, the newsletter thing pops up too. Like, do you want to subscribe to this newsletter? It's not unique to this website. It just...
I'm not following.
So whenever one opens up Becoming Buddha or Cross River Meditation, within 5 seconds, up pops, would you like to subscribe to this newsletter? And you have to X it off. not a big deal, but that happens, and that doesn't happen on the apps when you have them.
I don't know, it might.
Maybe.
Find out.
Can you get the meditations from there?
Everything. Yeah, the whole website is available now through the app.
I'll just take other websites that I use like that, and you don't have to go through that. They all pop up now. It's like an automatic pop-up. Do you want to subscribe to it? And the app doesn't usually have that. It's a small
I don't know if it does or not. Mm-hmm. Well, if the thing pops up, you just have to click the X and it's gone. So.
Right. But you do it over and over. Okay. All right.
Well, if you're doing it over and over, then something is wrong, because it should only happen once in a session.
Yes, that is true.
Yeah, so just click the X and it's gone.
Yes.
All right, so we'll finish as we always do with metta. Metta means goodwill or loving kindness, and we always finish our class with an expression of metta, and this is from the Buddha's teachings on metta from the Karaniya Metta Sutta. So,
read it slowly.
Thank you. So find your relaxed meditation posture. Gently close your eyes and gently close your mouth. And again, become mindful of your in-breath and your out-breath. And let that mindfulness of your in-breath and your out-breath unite your mind and your body. And these are the words of the Buddha on the Karaniya Metta Sutta. This is what should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, content and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in your ways, peaceful and calm and wise and skillful, not proud or demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise would later reprove. Wishing, in gladness and in safety, may all beings be at ease. Whatever living beings there may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short, or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born, may all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none through anger or ill will wish harm upon another. Even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. Radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding. By not holding to fixed views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being freed from all sense desires, is not born again into this world. Thank you all for a wonderful class this morning. Peace.
Thank you for listening. I rely on donations to support these talks. If you find benefit from these talks, please consider a donation at becoming-buddha.com. I welcome your questions and comments. To contact me and for guided meditations and instructions, Dhamma articles, recorded talks, and videos, please visit becoming-buddha.com. These talks are copyrighted and are distributed under a Creative Commons License 4.0. Peace.